I basically threw a grenade into a project and then went into like 4 days of back-to-back meetings while they scrambled around crying. So apologies, I owe them all a beer.
Hello and welcome to Off Script. Today we're talking about shifting security left.
So today we're going to talk about shifting security left.
Yes.
This is off the back of a book I read. Well, not just the fact that I read this book, but it's called Investments Unlimited.
Right.
And I don't know if you're into this sort of story format business book
thing. I am. I really prefer that over the practical facts of stuff.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to go in. There's a few books. There's the Phoenix Project, which is probably one of the more famous ones around DevOps and bottlenecking around certain individuals. Mm-hmm. This one is Investments Unlimited. So it's an investment firm, and they've just been slapped on the wrists for breaking a load of compliance.
Completely fiction.
Completely fictional, but it weaves a nice little story, and it's how they get on top of it and how they get all the existing old projects onto this new pipeline. And
yep.
It's got loads of little nice things in there, but it really got me thinking about our own DevSecOps, which is the buzzword, isn't it?
Yes.
And just sort of getting it fleshed out and documented. So for each project, we document like what the ways of working are, what our sort of terms of engagement, how people like to work with each other, because it's going to be different for each team.
Yeah.
Like, I quite like code environments without semicolons, and everyone else thinks I'm an idiot. But depending on the team, you can convince enough people, and then that becomes part of your TS config, and happy days.
Yeah, absolutely. I always love... I always love fictional books that are fiction, and so they're not based on a particular company, but probably has been informed by years of consulting. It's like when you've got a friend that's got a problem. It's probably you that's got the problem.
Yeah, well, that's how people learn, right? It's the war stories. It's not, people don't learn by reading boring long textbooks.
No.
I mean, you can. It's just a hard way.
But stories, you know, storytelling, that's why people use storytelling so much in conference talks. It's because it's a really compelling way to communicate things.
Yeah, and people can like visualise it, and they can picture the people involved and why this happened and how you got to that point and how you get out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's not, half of development isn't the code, it's the people, right? Or maybe even more.
It's mostly the people, yeah. I even used the term yesterday, you know, technology would be easy without the people.
AI is going to say hold my beer in a second, isn't it?
But it's worth noting that the people side is the most fun part as well. Like, you know, getting teams working well together and building products together is the fun part. I hope AI doesn't take that away.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, getting all that messy collaboration up front done and... Yeah, shifting left, which is a term that you hate.
But we're going to go with it.
Because it does kind of nicely explain about moving stuff that you would usually put at the end to the beginning.
Yeah.
Or you'd usually feel like you want to put at the end. Yeah. And security testing is often the one that gets pushed right to the last moment.
Yeah.
Mostly because you generally need a fully working application to do an effective penetration test on it.
Mm.
And this is no replacement for that.
No.
But it will help you when you get there.
I think it's just we've talked about it in previous episodes in terms of trying to reduce the friction of releasing and going for more atomic releases and trying to make, you know, those small steps towards releasing bigger things a lot easier. And I think this is definitely one of those things where if you catch some of the really obvious, or not necessarily obvious things early on, but also just kind of make it a really important part of the development culture, it's going to make your life a lot easier, especially if you're under pressure and you work into timelines. And, you know, it can get a bit gnarly towards the end if you've got a lot to do around the release process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And changing things that are security related right at the last minute is very, very risky.
Yeah.
That's the bit you don't want to rush, right?
And it depends on the sort of organization you're working in, but sometimes you'll have those sort of control gates. Or you'll have security kind of review boards on the way out, you know, making sure that you're doing everything that's above board, but sometimes they can be blockers, right? And we always hate when you kind of feel like you're just about to go and someone's like, no, absolutely, you've not ticked these things, or you've not got this right, or...
Yeah, you want to be frequently releasing and going through those pain points nice and early.
So
I guess a good place to start, I mean, a lot of our projects are TypeScript, so it's just switching on the really strict linting. So we extend a bunch of rules. RTS config has the Next.js stuff in there, so you've got you've got the ESLint rules from Core Web Vitals from Next.
Yep.
And then obviously Prettier overlaid over the top. So once you've battled out your formatting stuff, so two spaces, no semicolons, fight me. then you can move on to some of the more hairier bits that actually make a difference, which are making sure there's no unused variables so people tidy stuff up.
Yep.
Function length is quite important.
Yes.
Because function length improves readability in done in the right way. So you'll often find like a big function and it'll have loads of comments in. And where the comments are, that's usually a good name for a function that you refactor out to. And it also makes it easy to spot security problems because everything's nicely.
I love that the conciseness is, and readability is a security kind of improvement in itself, because you know the easier it is to read and understand, the easier it is to kind of make sure that you're not doing things that you should be doing.
Exactly. And then I also like to sneak some performance stuff in there. So JSX no bind is a favorite of mine, which is something that we've battled with on React Native apps. If you have basically if you have JSX and you've got functions in line, every time it renders, it reinitializes that function. It's quite heavy.
Yeah.
If you move that function somewhere else.
Okay, so outside of the function declaration itself.
Outside the JSX rendering.
Oh, right.
And then it doesn't have to. React can be then smarter about how it does stuff.
That's nice. I've not seen that one.
Yeah, there's a rule for it.
Nice. And
yeah, it's good. Put that on.
Yeah.
And then you can exclude, obviously, your end-to-end tests don't need the line limits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But once you've got this sort of base standard and everyone's sort of happy, this is when you want to start putting in some of the early sort of automated checks. So there's a package called Git Leaks. They have a GitHub Action. And it's really good. It just scans all your commits for anything that looks like a secret, and they constantly update their rule set.
Yeah.
And you can also put this in the commit path. When you're committing, you can just check the staged files.
Nice.
I wouldn't recommend running the full thing, because basically if you put too much in that pre-commit hook, developers turn it off, or they do, they force skip it on the command line or something. You want it down in the milliseconds. You don't want like your test suite or anything running in there. But
yeah, that's the thing with commit hooks. It's they are easily overridable. I think the key thing is getting into that sort of mindset of it's going to save me time than pushing up, seeing the pipelines fail, this or that.
I think for me, committing a secret, it's useful enough to have in that pre-commit.
Agree.
Because then you don't have to revert and then force push and take it out of the history and all that.
Yeah, and cycle the keys and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
you want to catch it there. Yeah. Whereas your actual security scan, which could take 40, 60 seconds, that doesn't want to be anywhere near your commit hook.
Yeah.
Because developer experience is priority and they will just turn it off.
Yeah, and there's nothing like an unhappy developer that will immediately skip those.
if they just press up arrow and they've got the git commit, skip all the shit command in there.
Yeah,
I've seen it.
Yeah.
maybe I've even done it.
Yeah.
But
I've seen a friend do it. Nice. So, you know, TypeScript's great. The actual kind of ecosystem has a lot of that stuff built in, which is great. I love Prettier. I think the reason I wish I disagreed more with you on the style stuff, but I'm with you on the kind of general configs. Did you have much of a challenge getting the kind of baseline agreement across the engineers on that one, or
a little bit? And Sam, sorry if you're listening, but I basically threw a grenade into a project and then went into like 4 days of back-to-back meetings while they scrambled around crying. So apologies, I owe them all a beer, but I basically added that line limit
thing,
and it's you can't deploy if it Fails or linting.
So you threw the rule in there and then you went away.
Yeah, merged it. And I think the comment from Sam was, you merged it without fixing the files. And I was like, oh shit, yeah. Sorry. So apologies for that. But after that, I think everyone was a lot happier.
Yeah.
Because I had a good chat and they probably all agreed that I was a dickhead. But it was probably for the best.
Fair enough.
I guess if I was to go back in time and do it again, I might actually fix the problems as well as slinging the rule in.
Just
there.
Create a bunch of blockers for the team.
Again, going back to it being a people thing. But apologies.
But, you know, I would argue, obviously culturally not great to do that, but having people kind of go through the files and understand the changes that they need to make anyway, which we're going to have to do moving forward with other things, probably isn't the end of the world.
Yeah, that's it. The other thing we put in there is this tool called Bearer.
Yeah.
And they've got a nice little, cloud icon, and they've got little bears on their website, which makes me happy.
Oh, lovely.
But that's really good because it can detect, SQL injection and all your basic favorite friends, but it's not too noisy. Some of these tools are proper noisy. They're like, it looks like you've seen the security scanning tools where you get a big report back and they're all absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
So you want it to make just enough noise so you can sit up and pay attention and actually fix some stuff, but not so noisy that you just ignore the whole thing.
Well, there's a problem where if you've got too strict a rule set or you've got, it's not pragmatic enough to understand that if it's a report that's 100 pages long, no one's going to read that. And it's going to feel so overwhelming that why would you even start fixing some of those problems?
Yeah, 100%.
I've just seen the logo. I like how the paw is the cloud. It's very...
It's good, isn't it?
Very enjoyable.
And Snick as well. So that has... A dog, is it? Like a pretty angry looking dog.
Yeah.
But that's also on there. Dependabot's pretty good as well. They bought Dependabot, didn't they?
I like Dependabot, yeah. Yeah, it's good.
And I think it's fine, the free one.
Yeah, it works really well. Catches most of the obvious stuff, doesn't it?
But the good thing about those automated tools is that while you're sleeping, they'll open a pull request with the change in, run all your test suite, and then you can, while you're making a cup of tea in the morning, you just press merge on them after you've had a quick glance at the preview URL.
Yeah. is it broken?
Yeah. Is it completely, bad?
That's the thing. If you've got these sort of automated steps that all plug together into these nice kind of reports of everything that's going on with your app, makes it really easy to do incremental changes, doesn't it? So
yeah, it just makes people more confident and feel safer moving quickly. And I guess that sort of brings us on to how it's set up at Glean. I think you've got a similar sort of setup in terms of secret management as Parallax does.
Yeah, so we use kind of automated pipelines quite heavily for the sort of DevSecOps side of things. We actually use 1Password for kind of secret management, which I really like because it's part of the culture already in terms of your digital hygiene as a normal user. So. Yeah. Yeah, first of all, the apps are really nice. Updating them is really nice in the apps if you do that. But obviously, you have all the command line tools as well to do automated updates.
It feels like that they're dog-fooding 1Password to the developers internally.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of nice little things.
The command line's really nicely written.
It's really nicely done. And you can also set up authorized Git commits in 1Password. So you press your fingerprint and then 1Password will do a signature and authorize it, and then you get a nice little tick in GitHub.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely gone all in on the dev side of the tooling, and it's really, really good. To the point where I'm actually not sure why you'd really use anything else at this point. Obviously, there's loads of other ways to store secrets with Vault and all that. HashiCorp has a whole set of products for dealing with that sort of stuff. But
yeah, I'd like 1Password.
Yeah,
I think it's got a good user experience. I like the Vault. It's good. For most projects at Parallax, a vault is automatically created and secrets are automatically created and slung in there.
Nice.
And then we can see who's accessed them and when.
Yeah.
Usually no one looks at them, but only the people that are committing on the project get access to the vault.
Yeah, that's nice. We've come such a long way from, the original sort of environment variable configuration process where everything was stored in the same namespace, and you had to do like funky prefixing and things like that. We've come a long way in terms of that sort of automated permissions, and also just the segregation of secrets is a big thing.
Yeah, I still worry about, you know, because developers will sometimes follow the path of least resistance, and you just worry that people, if you don't make it really, really easy, the alternative is they're just Slack DMing all the secrets to everyone.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It's, you know, you want to make sure that it's really, really hard to do the stupid stuff. And we talked about this a little while ago, but yeah, sensible defaults, make it really easy that out of the box your projects kind of work with a lot of this sort of stuff. But also, if you need to update or change something, there's a low friction option to do that.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah. You make it easy to do the right thing is a good mantra for a lot of areas of life.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how does this sort of impact the teams that you've worked with? Do you think all this automated stuff helps? Do you think people get on board with it pretty easily?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it depends on the sort of organization you're working in, but you want to make it a no-brainer, and you want to make it so it's just part of the culture, just like, you know, just like test-driven development or something like that. And yeah, I think just automation, it heavily impacts how successful this sort of stuff is. You know, you even mentioned the sort of commit hooks that you'd have locally. I just think it needs to be a really important cultural part of the team.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's really good. I think often when you measure something, I feel like it's good to get people to feel proud of it, so to show it off.
Yeah.
And for nerds like me, that's little badges on the readme.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
It's as simple as like a whole row of nice green past security checks, past all your unit tests.
Yeah.
And it's using all the latest versions of everything, and
yeah,
it's all green all the way along. And that just makes you feel nice, warm and fuzzy, and it's really public because it's the first thing people see when they hit the repo.
Yeah, I think my version of that is the sort of thing where, you know, you might have some sort of breach that's very public or something, not that you would, as a company, as being, you'd see somewhere a company's had an issue or a breach of something, and maybe someone circulated like an article with the root cause of it, and you kind of have the pride of going, no, we've already caught that, already patched the release, we're ahead of it, you know, and having that sort of proactive way of dealing with stuff and communicating that to the business, you know, it might be something like the COO sends you this thing that they've seen and they're like really worried about it, and you're like, we're already there.
Some automated tools already patched that.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's good. I think go back to the shift left thing, but the earlier you put these things in place, the easier it's going to be.
Yeah.
Especially around like strict TypeScript linting and things.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if you add that at the end, you can have a bad time because it's just, you've got thousands of things to sort of chunk through. Or
so we talked a lot about TypeScript and you know, similar sort of languages, but what do you do if the language that you're working with hasn't got a particularly mature kind of tool set in this area? You know, what if you don't have linters that have the rule sets out of the box configured? What do you do if it's just something, maybe you're really like using an experimental language that hasn't got much support for this sort of stuff? How would you approach that then?
I think what TypeScript allows you to do is it gives you like a solid contract all the way through from the database to the front end. So if your language doesn't give you that, then you need to write a hell of a lot more automated tests. And I always used to be anti-TypeScript until I realized, well, there was a project I was working on and we had to make a very, very large structural change right at the last minute. And it just made that so easy because we could change the shape of this object and immediately the rest of the code base lit up. Yeah. So I think if you're using another language that doesn't have all this tooling, it's going to be tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of those tools do allow you to write kind of custom parsers for the AST of the language you're using or something like that, but it is a lot more work, right? And yeah, you don't really want to get into that world of writing loads of parsers and stuff to lint your code. But
yeah, I mean, Ruby land had a load of good security checking things, which I think we've mentioned in the past. But yeah,
I guess it depends whether it's a kind of a language you can statically analyze too, or if it's more of a dynamic language. But yeah, I mean, Ruby's popular one's called RuboCop, which I absolutely love just for the name.
Nice. And there's Breakman as well.
I guess it's kind of, some of these tools do things in a sort of language agnostic way, so I guess you still have those sort of easy outs there, but for some of the more deep integration to languages, like we were talking earlier about how in TypeScript, if you're logging an object that has sensitive data in it, TypeScript to be able to know where that kind of where that data is passed through the app and things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, that's it. So Bearer has a load of rules in where it can see if an object contains sensitive PII, and it can tell where in the code base you're sort of popping that out.
Mm. And especially with stuff like React and everything where you don't know if it's server-side rendered or client-side, and you're not sure where it's going to get logged out, if it's going to be actually on the client or not.
Yeah, server actions and all that makes it really confusing sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, cool. So what are your sort of key takeaways then, I guess, for this? Mainly just to try and shift literally as far left as possible in terms of the automation side of things.
Just get the hard bits done first, yeah. And Dean, not just the security stuff, but yeah, in general in your project, if you know you need to do it early. But yeah, I think that good hygiene at the start, a little bit of pain for sort of long-term gain, isn't it? So,
and in terms of kicking off a new project or kind of onboarding a new developer to a project, is there much in the way of sort of onboarding, sharing around that sort of tool set? Do you have kind of any sort of initial instructions to how you do security at Parallax, or is it more that you kind of like look at the pipelines, check out how they're configured, and off you go? Is there anything additional that you do?
No, it's basically that. It's slightly different per project depending on the risk appetite.
Yeah.
It's all documented, the tooling, so it's the process lives in the code as much as possible. And then there's other ways of working documented in, we do it in Confluence, but some people do it in Markdown files and stuff.
Yeah, that risk appetite point is a really good one, actually, which is essentially you may have a very different risk appetite depending on the sort of project you're working on. So at the moment we're working on a few things at Glean. The main Glean kind of product is super stable. We're not going too crazy with experimentation on there because we kind of respect that it's a tool set required to support, those with accessibility needs and things like that. So we don't take a huge high risk approach to that because we appreciate the audience is different to maybe a more experimental application where users are aware that it's an experimental. And they, ultimately we might be happier to kind of ship a little bit faster in the early days to get that sort of, market fit or try and get that feedback.
Yeah. Well, for example, a statically generated developer guide or like part of your site, like developer.yourbrand.com.
Yeah.
That can be knocked up by the intern. That doesn't, it's not got any secrets in it. Renders from Markdown into HTML.
Shouldn't
have any. You still put the Git leak check on there if you want.
Yeah.
It's pretty low risk, right? Mm. Whereas applications where you've got a sign up flow or it takes PII or interacts with databases and stuff, you're starting to ratchet the risk level up, aren't you?
And especially when you're doing quite specific projects in compliance and things like that at the moment, do you have like additional rule sets for that, or are you looking at doing additional testing around that?
Yeah, definitely additional testing. So the first markets we're going to are sort of like mining and trading and stuff. Mm. I'd never say never, like banking.
Mm.
Banking has a whole other raft of requirements.
Yeah, and regulation as well, yeah.
Yeah. We're keeping our eye on that sort of target. So, we need to be super squeaky clean on the security side.
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Well, yeah, I've really enjoyed kind of chatting through this. Even though I do hate the word shifting left, it does have a really kind of... A good home here because ultimately the more you shift left, the easier it becomes to kind of ship higher quality products on the right hand side. So
absolutely. And go and read Investments Unlimited, and thanks to David Sugden for recommending it on LinkedIn. Check it out.
Awesome. Cheers, Ray.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Offscript. Hit subscribe for more episodes in the future, and we'll see you next time.